Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we welcome you back to a new year of the New World Next Week, which of course you can find at NewWorldNextWeek.com, and this is the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett, breaking down some of the most important stories in alternative media and open source intelligence, and we will begin our new year with our first story coming from Paul Joseph Watson, noting Ron Paul is the only candidate with the momentum to challenge Romney. Ron Paul's second place in New Hampshire confirms him as the only candidate going into South Carolina and Florida with any kind of momentum to challenge Mitt Romney, with support for Santorum, Gingrich, Huntsman all collapsing. Polls show that Ron Paul is the only other candidate besides Romney who has a good chance of beating Obama in a hypothetical head-to-head. He trumps all the other challengers to Romney in terms of electability. The key for Ron Paul is the fact that Romney takes South Carolina and Florida. Several, if not all, of the other candidates will suspend their campaigns or drop out altogether. This will force the media to frame Paul as Romney's adversary and will allow Paul to unleash a barrage of attacks exposing Romney's record as a big government Republican in name only, Republican rhino. And we have other sources from National Journal. Ron Paul says it is a two-man race now. But a different piece from the Less is More blog on the Boston Globe, why Paul won't make third-party bid. James, we begin this new year heading into what I've called on my show, and I think I took it from Daniel Abramson of False Flag News, the emotional con game of U.S. presidential selections.
Unfortunately, that's exactly what it is, and people can get invested with their energies, their emotions, even their identities into a particular candidate as if that's all that really matters, when we know that what really matters is the ideas behind the candidates, and there is absolutely no difference whatsoever between Obama and Romney, who is now the pretty much selected in all but name to be the GOP presidential candidate. So what I think the significance of this is, and the significance of Paul's strong showings in Iowa and New Hampshire, shows that that liberty is taking over and it is spreading exactly as we knew it would, because when people are presented with the truth, it simply makes sense. Unlike all of the dissembling and all of the garbage spewed out by Obama / Romney. So let's go ahead and say it's not Obama versus Romney that's coming up in 2012. It's Obama / Romney versus Ron Paul. And why not? Let's coin it right now before anyone else does. It's Obamney versus Paul for 2012. You have the choice of the exact same policy as we've been for the controlled American government has been following for the past few decades, or we can actually try something different with someone like Ron Paul and the idea of legalizing the Constitution, bringing the troops home, abolishing the Federal Reserve. And let me be clear, I'm not here to I'm not one of these people who thinks that the entire world's problems will be solved by a single man. I think that's pie in the sky thinking. And if we put all our eggs in the Ron Paul basket, then if he ever did get elected and he was changing the system, I have absolutely no doubt if he was doing actual things to really challenge the status quo, he would be assassinated, he would be set up, whatever it is. So they can take one person down, but they cannot take down a movement of people. So even more than Obamney versus Paul for 2012, it's Obamney versus the people. And it's this time, right now, it's absolutely key to get the message of liberty out, because it cannot be put back in the bottle. So this is the chance. This is what's really happening now. And they're going to try their best to try to sideline and marginalize Paul, but it's really difficult to do that now as the rest of the GOP contenders start dropping out of the race. So it's a huge time to score some major points, dropping info bombs in mainstream primetime, like the radical revolutionary idea of bringing troops home or abolishing the Federal Reserve. So it's a very exciting time, and there's a lot on the table right now, and I just hope that people understand that this is an absolute prime time to capitalize on all of the seeds that we've been planting for years now.
That's such a great breakdown, I think, on this situation. And as all of these folks would say, it's not about any one person. It's about these ideas and ideals. James, our second story turns to the geopolitical grand chessboard abroad, and we'll take it from National Post. Israel not shedding a tear over mystery death of Iranian nuclear scientist. A senior Israeli official on Wednesday, and that is today here to me in the States, January 11th, 2012, said he was unaware who planted a car bomb that killed an Iranian nuclear scientist, but called the plot an act of revenge. Quote, "I don't know who took revenge on the Iranian scientist, but I am definitely not shedding a tear," end quote, Israeli military spokesman Brigadier General Yoav Mordechai wrote on his official Facebook page. Mostafa Ahmadi Roshan, age 32, was killed along with his driver and bodyguard in a Tehran car bombing earlier on Wednesday, again today, in a blast the Islamic Republic immediately blamed on Israel and the U.S. He was the fourth Iranian scientist to be killed in an explosion in the past 2 years, with the finger repeatedly pointed at Israel. And the Haaretz newspaper helpfully adds a timeline to these assassinations over the last 2 years, seeming to fall with this most recent assassination and the first one on dates very close to one another, January 10th and 11th. But an update from National Journal, Clinton denies U.S. role in killing Iranian nuclear scientist. Secretary of State and possible future Vice President Hillary Rodham Clinton on Wednesday refuted Iranian accusations that the U.S. had a role in killing a top nuclear scientist. Addressing the latest escalation in tensions between Washington and Tehran in recent days, quote, "I want to categorically deny any United States involvement in any kind of act of violence inside Iran," end quote, Hillary said. But Fars News, one of the official Iranian news sources, their take says, assassination of Iranian scientist, joint operation by Mossad and MKO. Israeli sources confirm that the terrorist attack which killed this scientist was a joint op carried out by the agents of the Israeli spy agency Mossad and the anti-Iran terrorist Mojahideen-e-Khalq organization, which they abbreviate as MKO. And James, that sounded really familiar to me, and so I checked 2 episodes back on New World Next Week, and we'll provide that link for you. U.S. troops guarded terrorist camp in Iraq, sometimes referred to as the MEK, here by Fars News referred to as MKO. But again, we see funding terror worldwide on the grand chessboard.
Exactly the point. So the State Department and Hillary Clinton and all the other liars can come out and categorically deny any involvement by basically having this cutout organization that the U.S. troops are guarding and Mossad is directing. So it's not actually Israeli or American citizens that are planting the bombs or doing all of this dirty work. It's the terrorists that they're funding, controlling, directing, and creating, as always. So there you go. That's that part of the story. But I have a message for my dear American friends out there. Your government, whatever it is, the bankster-controlled, corporate-funded, Israeli-lobby-directed government that has occupied the American centers of power and establishment and have been directing your army for so long, you are at war with Iran right now. There's an excellent timeline in Haaretz. I hope people will take a look at over the past 12 months of the attacks that have been going on, killing nuclear scientists, killing people in the Iranian Atomic Energy Agency, the attempted assassination of Ahmadinejad at an oil facility, the explosions in Natanz near the new reactor. Just thing after thing has been going on. So much has been going on in Iran that they'll report one piece here, one piece there, but they don't put the pieces together and talk about the embargo and the sanctions that are going on right now. Just absolute craziness. And it is war that is happening right now. This is what war looks like. It's the beginning stages of war, and there aren't boots on the ground. There's no bombs dropping at this point, but this is active war. So you are already at war, and I hope that the people understand what that means. And I don't know. I wonder what happened to any idea that there was an anti-war movement in America, in Canada, in any of these countries, because they've been completely missing in action for some reason for several years now. So I hope people understand that this is war and it's only escalating from here. So I really hope people are on the ball on this one and are calling it for what it is.
And you talked about not putting all those pieces together. Let's throw in even the other pieces, as reported from New York Times and Wired investigations, about the U.S. and Israel creating the Stuxnet virus to attack Iran's nuclear facility. So that's what you're saying. It may not be boots on the ground, but it is war, and it's also taking the form of a, as I call it, cyberspace war. Our third and final story, James, we'll take from the always informative activistpost.com. Forced sterilization victims possibly granted $50,000 over admitted U.S. eugenics program. North Carolina officials are proposing that victims of forced sterilization programs be given $50,000 each in compensation, with the Associated Press admitting that the sterilization campaign was part of a, quote, once common public health practice called eugenics, end quote. Victims include thousands of individuals such as criminals, mentally disabled, and women who were sterilized after giving birth to children as a product of rape. The forced sterilizations occurred from 1929 to 1974 under admitted eugenics programs that officials claimed were creating a better society by removing the reproductive abilities of criminals and those suffering from mental disorders. During that time period, more than 7,600 individuals in North Carolina alone were sterilized. On a national scale, around 60,000 were forcibly sterilized under the same eugenics program. What makes North Carolina's rampant sterilization so concerning, however, is that the program kept going right on through World War II, despite the direct association between eugenics and Nazi Germany. According to, again, the Associated Press, quote, North Carolina's program stood out because it ramped up sterilizations after World War II, despite associations between eugenics and Nazi Germany, end quote. And we tie in that Associated Press link for you as well, Reuters and other bits. James, I do have a related and a flashback, but your take, again, on things that you see, and I saw this in the newspaper, and we see these reported in somewhat isolated and regional areas, and they're, you know, in the back of the paper, and it's important to, you know, a select amount of people, but it just goes, it goes down the memory hole.
Yes, it does. And I guess my home province of Alberta in Canada has one up on North Carolina, because I believe it continued its forced sterilization program right up into the 1980s. So take that, North Carolina. We can be worse than you any day. Absolutely disgusting history, isn't it? How do you even approach the subject of compensation for something like that? I mean, there's no monetary value that you can put on someone's right to reproduce. And it can never, should never, it's absolutely unthinkable that that could ever be taken away by any government for any reason whatsoever. But again, we've seen in the last couple of decades this idea being re-legitimized through different reasons, like Maurice Strong's idea that we should have licenses to have children, and all of this nonsense and silliness that's being brought in for so many other reasons. And we have the water being polluted with the estrogen mimicking endocrine disruptors that are turning the fish into girls and turning men in more effeminate. There's the BPA that's in the everything from the food line, the aluminum cans, to the printer receipts, to everything that's also an estrogen mimicker. There's fluoride that's in the water that's dumbing people down, but it's not sodium fluoride. It's actually fluorosilicic acid, which is a byproduct of the uranium ore mining process, which explains all of the radioactive material that's getting into the water, which was exposed in Texas a couple of years ago. I mean, you cannot stop with this association. I could go on for 6 or 7 hours talking about the different aspects of this eugenics program, which still exists, and the same people who have been promoting it for decades are now in the highest positions of power, including the White House science czar, who is a Paul Ehrlich's buddy and wrote in the 1970s about how the forced sterilization and putting sterilants in the water supply would be a great idea. I could go on and on and on and on, but suffice it to say, eugenics is not dead, and people have to understand this is very much a current issue, not a past historical issue.
So I mentioned I saw this in the newspaper, and I never stop my news and info gathering. Even on my lunch break at work, I go through the Oregonian and I go through the New York Times. Same day, same newspaper, different story. U.S. argues it is immune from Guatemalan STD experiment lawsuit. The Obama administration argued Monday that Guatemalans unknowingly exposed to sexually transmitted diseases by U.S. researchers in the 1940s cannot sue the United States, no matter how shameful and unethical the studies were. James, we're running out of time, but again, we'll provide all the links for folks to check these stories out. And we covered this Guatemalan story back in early 2010 on the March 3rd episode under Experiments Exposed. James, I will return to the airwaves this week with the Media Monarchy podcast. So much to catch up on in the worlds of murder and mayhem and holy hexes and all of the things going on in the Media Monarchy. So again, I'm really excited to start another year of New World next week with you, man.
Looking forward to it, and my podcast will be returning from winter hiatus this Saturday. So until then, take care and thank you.
Thank you.